I've spent a good deal of my life emphasizing family life education. And a lot of that had to do with guiding children. I'll share with you some of that experience that I've had in the last 50 years. It scares me a little bit when I watch what's happening to some of these families these days. You know, the Bible tells us that a child left to himself will bring his mother to shame. And you can see that everywhere you look, children left to themselves. We see more violence. We see more selfishness. We see more strife and conflict. And I think we'll see some more unless we take seriously some of the directives that I think are available to us in the scriptures of how to approach our children. I have been a marriage counselor. That means working with children for about 50 years now. And that's almost routine when people come with a problem child. I listen to their story for a while. It becomes very evident that these people don't agree on how to handle a child. You know, so what you have to do is shelve the child problem. Not ignore it, but shelve it, because you've got a marriage problem here. You got two people who can't get together what to do with this child. And that is a very hopeless kind of situation. And children will learn after a while to pit one parent against the other. And then by the time they're in their teens, they can do what they please. They're managing their parents rather than the other way around. But I get into the marriage problem, and it becomes evident that this is not a marriage problem. This is a man who has a problem and a woman who has a problem. They can't even get it wrong on how to run their marriage, much less children. So we have to table the marriage and help these people look at themselves, because it takes a happy man, a cheerful man, a relaxed man, and the same kind of a woman to manage children. I mean, it takes cheerful people to manage children. But some people tell me, I've got three preschool kids. You mean I should be cheerful? Well, listen, if your mental health depends on the activities of three preschool children, you're sunk. Yes, a mother with three preschool children can be a happy lady. And if you're a father with three school children, you can be a happy man with three preschool children. Well, all you have to do is wait 5 years and you don't have any preschool children. Now you're going to be asking, what do you do about grade school kids? Then comes the question, what do you do about teenagers? So it gets more intense. It's hard work, difficult work, but it's fun if you do it right. Like playing football. I used to play football high school, that's all I could play. But, you know, we'd come to school 3 weeks before the rest of the kids, and we'd toughen ourselves up. We'd toughen our muscles up. And, you know, that's what football is. You contact each other like that for 2 hours. It's called football. It's a great game. I mean, you love it. The pain, the excruciating pain is delightful. I can still remember one time laying on the ground at the end of the game. I was breathing dust, but I was too tired to move, so I just breathed dust. There was one of my buddies laying there over there. I leaned, rolled over to him. We helped each other up, and we were staggering into the football stadium locker room. He said, "Wasn't that a great game?" And I said, "Yeah, we can hardly walk." "Yeah, there was. I wonder who we're going to play next week." He said, "That's football. Tough, hard, excruciating. You risk smashing your skull in or hurting your backbone, being crippled for life. You do it gladly for the team. You do it gladly for the team." I would limp home sometimes, just delighted with that kind of a privilege of limping home for my team. So to be straining at something and to be involved in something that's difficult and hard and demanding and it takes energy, you fit that into why are you doing it? And if you get the right vision about your opportunity as a parent and all the strife and difficulty, it adds up to a lot of fun. Now, there are some considerations, I think, that we need to think about when it comes to guiding children. Now, let me give you some of those. One, this is in Ephesians 6:2-3. And the essence of it is, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God hath given you. Honor your father and your mother. That means that you have to be worthy of honor, young lady. And sir? Now, to be worthy of honor implies that we behave in a certain way, doesn't it? But I'm not talking about you and your children. I'm talking about you and your father and mother. I'm talking about your relationship to grandma and grandpa, which is a very critical relationship. Did I get some playback here? Honor your father and your mother. If you have unresolved issues between you and your father and mother, it's very critical that you get those straightened out. Because the process involved in coming to terms with your mother and father are the same processes that they're involved in dealing with your own children. Your children to watch how you get along with your mother and father is a very important part of raising children. So unresolved issues between you and your family, I think you ought to consider as a very serious matter. And you ought to do everything that you can do to see that though that relationship is a friendly one. And honor, you see, this is you're a father now. And your attitude needs to be that your children are going to honor that mother of theirs. And you need to be honoring her too. You got to think about your wife. I like her. I admire her. I respect her. My main responsibility in this world. God gave me the responsibility to see to it that I do everything I can do to make this wife of mine be the most fulfilled, happy person that she could possibly be. That's my job as a husband. Now you may be dealing with a woman that doesn't want any help. You may be dealing with a woman that says, "Keep your grubby hands off of me." I don't know who you got to work with, but whatever you got to work with, that's what you got to work with. Maybe a nasty wife, I don't know. But you don't, that's no reason for you to be a nasty husband because you have a nasty wife. Right? And vice versa. You know, the implication being it takes a nice man and a nice lady to manage children. Two happy people. You see, that's separate from that job itself. Now, we have a bookstore over there. This workbook, that's all I'm going to say about managing yourself. There's this book called The Heart of the Problem. And the heart of the problem of any individual is the heart. And to do what you need to do to be the kind of a person that you need to be in order to be the kind of an adult you need to be, You can get some help out of that. Well, what we're talking about right now is a book and a workbook called I Want to Enjoy My Children. You know, it's easy to make babies, isn't it? But then you just ask for a 20-year job. Tough job. And so I wrote my first book, 20 years. My next book, I said 30 years. I got up to 54. 54 years. kids are still coming around. I like that. See, you start something that keeps on going. It can become increasingly difficult, or it can become increasingly satisfactory, depending on how you go about it. But I think one of the first steps is to take care of your relationship as far as you can, to have a congenial relationship with your mother and father, and that means your father-in-law and your mother-in-law too. So what are you going to do about those people? That's enough to challenge any sensible adult, isn't it? Okay, the next one. Training your child is a parental responsibility. Training your child. A lot of people are saying these days, don't pressure your child. Don't impose upon your children. Let your children want to do what they do. If they don't want to do it, don't force them to do it. I see it all the time. Imagine discussing diet with a four-year-old. Would you like to eat your... You see, if you give them some peas, you should feed it to them. Eat your peas. That becomes a more formidable problem than what do we do about Russia? How do you get peas down your kid's throat? I've had mothers say to me, how do you get your kids to want to get dressed? I say to them, you want to get dressed, don't you? No. Well, once you get dressed, we'll have breakfast. I don't want any breakfast. If you get breakfast, we'll watch TV. I don't want any TV. How do you get children to want to get dressed? My answer is, I don't know. But I know how to get them dressed. First thing you do is grab them. And you stuff them into it. That's training a child in the way that it should go. Would you like to get dressed? Listen, we're about to dress you. You make it as easy or as hard as you want to, but you're going to get dressed. Okay? Bedtime. Would you like to go to bed? You know, kids get so tired of being consulted for advice from their parents. But by the time they're 18, why should they respect their parents? They've been coaching them all these years. The job of training falls to the parent. Now you may have been raised that way. Your mother asked you, what would you like to do? And you may have that attitude, don't frustrate me. I'm delicate. I'm easily offended. Be careful how you treat me. Because I'm going to get upset if you don't treat me right. And you wouldn't want to hinder your little kid's little ego, would you? Just let your children catch on to the fact that you're trying to keep them happy and they'll drive you crazy. So your job is to train them in the way that they should go. And I'm talking about a cheerful lady. You know, there are some things about her that I copied down here. I like some of these ideas. One of them is this. Phil Baldwin came up with this one. Children never have been good at listening to their elders, but they are never fail to imitate their elders. It's interesting, isn't it? I used to be a dean in a college, and I would talk to these kids who didn't want to be anything to do with their families, and their parents would come and visit, and here's this young lady, she acts just like her mother. Her mother didn't sit her down and say, this is how you talk. You see, there's another little term. much of what your children receive from you is caught, not taught. Did you ever get your own voice coming back from your own kids? You didn't teach them that, did you? One way to handle character, one way to teach character is to have it around the house. The thing that we're talking about is so much more a matter of being yourself and doing what comes natural, rather than having some fancy rules that you have to obey. So the job of parenthood is to train your children in the way that they should go. Now I had we had some relatives that came over to visit our house. And they had a little girl, about 3. We sat down to the table, and this little girl goes, "Well, we didn't say anything." And this first thing the mother says, and you hear this, but man, why that can't just go? Can't go on for 2 weeks. Better put a stop to this right now. I didn't ask the mother for permission. But I simply said to this little girl, "I want you to stop screaming." She looked me right in the eye and went, "Ah!" Imagine a little kid defying me. Oh, so I just picked her up. You know, when you talk to your children, you want to get eyeball to eyeball with them. Either lift them up to where you are or get down there where they are. I lifted her up to me as I was carrying her into the bedroom. I told you to stop screaming. I'm going to isolate you in this room. You stay there till you can come out and not scream. And I left her. Well, you can imagine the atmosphere when I got back to the table. And right behind me was this little kid. And we put her up in her chair. She looked at me, and I looked at her, and she didn't scream. That was the difference between me and her mother. I meant for her to not scream, and her mother didn't. This is a very important thought here. When you ask your children to do something, you must have the confident expectation that what you are requiring of them is in their best interests, and therefore you will do what you need to do in order to make it happen. You got that? The confident expectation that what you require your children to do is in their best interests, and therefore you will do whatever you have to do in order to make it happen. For instance, when your children need to go to a doctor, what do? You take them to the doctor, don't you? Whether they like it or not. Why do you do it? Because you think they should see doctors. What do you do about school? You're not afraid of kids getting in school. When school time is up, you see that they go, don't you? Well, you have to do the same thing with the limits in your house. You don't want to require anything of your children that is not fair and reasonable and in their best interests. And you do whatever you need to do in order to make it happen. For instance, we had a rule at our house one time. By the way, I've been married 3 times. I should explain that. My first wife, we were married for 42 years. And she passed away with a cancer problem. I married again, and my wife died of a brain aneurysm after 3 years. I married again, and now Joe and I have been married for 9 years. And Joe is over here. Joe, would you stand up? And some people wonder, she's a pretty courageous woman to take me on after. We've been married for 9 years. So I'm for marriage. you know, you have to work together to train these children in the way that they should go. See, what I had an illustration I was going to share with you. So we'll come back. Say it's bedtime. When I was a graduate student, I worked at home quite a bit, and I would see these ladies relate to their children. And there was we wanted to know where our children were. I think that's important. You know where your children are, and you know what they're doing. So we had them playing in our backyard. And we found out that if you take children and let them play in your backyard, you have very little competition. Very few people will argue with you in our backyard, too. So we had them in our backyard. We had to decide whether to raise grass or kids. We decided we were going to raise kids. I would hear this mother. You'd hear this voice come across the ether waves. Johnny! Everybody could hear it. Johnny kept right on playing. The second time and the third time you hear this voice. One of the kids even said, "Hey, Johnny, don't you know your mother's calling you?" He says, "I don't need to go yet." And pretty soon you hear this voice. "Johnny!" He took off for home. His mother had two voices. The one who just makes this noise, he didn't need to pay attention to that. But she's just making noise. Children adjust to your noise. But when you mean it, you say it a different way, and then they know to go. Bedtime is like that. You can say, "It's bedtime. It's bedtime. Come on now, it's bedtime." You see it happen over and over again. People are calling their children, and nothing happens. Now, I think this is something you need to be aware of. When you do that, you are training your children in non-compliance. You do it 100 times a day if you don't watch. We pulled up to a curb and we got out of the car, and the mother said to her daughter, "Close the car door." The daughter took off, didn't close the car door. She says, "These kids, you can't tell them anything these days." I said, "Listen, you're teaching your daughter non-compliance. She didn't need to close that car door. You're going to close it. Just because you tell her to close it doesn't mean that you want her to close it. She just proved it. Here you mutter to yourself and you close the door. You are training your child in non-compliance. Pick up that toy." I said, "Pick up that toy." The child doesn't pick up the toy and you don't do anything about it. You're training your child in non-compliance. Now, this is a very important thought here, because you need to teach your children to obey a directive, because it's not going to be too long they're going to be in school. Those school teachers are telling me today that they're spending most of their time trying to get kids to sit down. Kids don't need to pay any attention. Young kids, 5-6-year-old children, they don't need to pay any attention to teachers. They've been taught for 5 years that you don't need to pay any attention to adults. And so the poor teacher is in that same place where the children are in the mood not to comply with the teacher's wishes. Jesus has had 5 years of this already. See what I'm saying? Don't teach your children non-compliance. If you're not prepared to follow through on a directive, then don't give one. But if you give one, then make sure you follow through on it. All right, now, number one, the first thing that we have to do is to see to it that our relationship to our in-laws and our parents is as good as we can make it. Secondly, you need to have the limits and the rules that you set for your children. You need to have the confident expectation that what you require of your child is in their best interests. And if so, you will do what you need to do in order to make them do it. The rest of the job of parenthood, I think, is a matter of setting limits. I was telling the folks in the last session, one of my favorite spots, I'm from Michigan, is the University of Michigan football stadium. That thing will hold 110,000 people. And whenever they play at home, it doesn't matter if it's snowing or raining, it can be below zero, it can be raining as hard as it can rain. It doesn't matter what the weather is, there will be 110,000 people in that stadium. Now what can you do to draw 110,000 people in a stadium? I'll tell you what it is. There's something about predictability that's involved here, I think. When you go into that stadium and you look at that football field, it looks the same as it always did. You don't expect to see a wavy line on the bottom of it. And so you say, how come there's a wavy line? Well, we have a lineman, he's not in the mood to do straight lines, and we want to frustrate him, so we got a crooked line. No, you don't do that. You got straight line. And it's always the same. Same length, same width, same markings. Same old dreary markings every time you go in there. I say that's one of the reasons you go in there. At least that's predictable. There's another thing about that stadium. When the football players come out, they're all going to be dressed the same. You don't have 10 guys in a uniform and the other guy in a tracksuit. He doesn't like uniforms, so you let him wear a tracksuit. But what they wear is predictable. Now the rule that they're going to be guided by is also predictable. The home team, the visiting team have the same rules. The visitors, the spectators, and us home spectators, we all look at the same rule book. We're not arguing about rules. You need rules and you need boundaries. And that's what makes the game interesting. Now you're going to play the game on those on that field. There's lots of room for ingenuity to play the game on that field, but you're not arguing about boundaries or rules. Same with tennis. I can play tennis with somebody in a foreign country. I don't even know that I can't even talk to them. But we can play tennis together because we have rules and boundaries in common. You know how critical and important it is to be subject to rules and boundaries. Now this is very critical for you to do the same thing. You and your partner are a team. Not competitors, but teammates. And so your job then as parents is to design a playing field for your children. It consists of rules. It consists of boundaries. There's another thing about that football game. There are referees there. Now, the referee's job is to see that these players obey the rules and stay within the boundaries. Now, how many are there on a football field? You count them next time you see a football game. There are six men on that field who they call referees. And they see to it that you play within the rules and within the boundaries. Now when you step over the boundary, the referee will blow the whistle and he'll tell the whole crowd, outside. If you disobey one of the rules, he'll blow his whistle and he'll say, number 68, clipping. He tells the whole 110,000 people, number 68 is clipped. If he doesn't do that, the audience is going to get after that referee. The purpose of the referee is to see to it that the game goes on smoothly. And he has to do whatever he has to do to see to it that these people stay within those boundaries and those rules. That's the essence of parenthood, folks. To see to it that your children head in the direction that you choose for them. Not what would you like to do, but what in, I'd say, the decision as to what you ought to do by way of rules and boundaries rests with a husband and a wife. Now, one of the difficulties is you have a husband and a wife that will not agree on the rules. But that's the job you got anyway. Now, you may take your children's taste into consideration, their interests or their skills or their wishes or their limitations. You can consider their needs and their interests, but you're the one that calls the shots as to what the rules are going to be. I remember one time when our children were small, both smaller in grade school, we were at a lake, and they were being introduced to water skiing. Now, my daughter, they asked her, "Do you want to learn to water ski?" And she said, "No." And I knew that wasn't true. But her first response was, "No, I don't want to learn water skiing. Everybody else is water skiing but her." She's sitting there. And she says, "I don't want to water ski." I knew that. I knew better than that. I said to her, "You're going to get on those skis." I knew that if she got on those skis, that she would love it. I knew that much about her. Now, you see, you have to pay attention to your children so you know who they are. You know what they can do and what they can't do. But as her father, I saw to it that she got on those skis because I knew perfectly well that she was longing to get on those skis. And sure enough, came an avid water skier. But she needed a little help in order to do it. Now this is a concept that I want to leave with you. Help your children obey the rules. Oh, for instance, I watch a mother call from the house, and her little girl is playing outside. "Time to come in." You hear that voice again. "Time to come in." Nothing happens. "Time to come in." And pretty soon you see this woman. She's coming out of the house now with her hair flying. And she approaches this kid. "Didn't I tell you to come in?" Wham! Now she's got a bawling child and she's mad and they're both outside. There must be a better way to do it. Have you ever had that experience? What did she need? She needed some help. How's the quickest way to help your child to get in the house? What would you say? Anybody have any ideas? Go and get them. You're teaching her. I called you and I mean for you to come in. You just lead her, gently lead her into the house. It doesn't require a lecture or anything. You're training her that you mean what you say. See, I'm talking about a friendly mother now. I'm not talking about an unfriendly mother. But this little kid, she doesn't know you mean what you say unless you teach her that you mean what you say. What's the quickest way to get your child in bed? Scoop them up and put them in bed. Well, won't they become dependent on you? I haven't found that to be true. Your children are normal, natural children. And so what you've got is a little rebel, haven't you? It was born into her. You didn't give it to her. You didn't create her. You didn't create... Now, some psychologists will tell you that you are creating a rebel because you are establishing some limits. If you don't want to have a rebellious child, then don't have any limits and you won't have a rebellious child. So what do you get? You get a spoiled brat, don't you? If you don't want to create a rebel, then don't have any boundaries. That's not, the Bible says that's not true. You that little kid was a born rebel. That's why the Christian education is so important. That rebellious spirit has to be surrendered to the Lord. In the meantime, our job is to hold those kids steady. One of the most important things that kids can need to learn in their preschool days is that education requires that you sit still. You can take them to church and teach them to sit still.
Amen.
But I got to go to the bathroom. Well, take them to the next time you take them to the bathroom, right before you sit them down. I don't care how you do it, but one of your jobs is to teach your children to sit still, because you have to do that in order to get some to study, don't you? One of the reasons your children have such poor performance in school is because they're not expected to do anything. So if your children need help, give them whatever help they need. Our daughter, one time, we had a rule that you go to church every Sunday and every Wednesday. Our daughter was a teenager, and she announced one Wednesday that she was not going to church. I am not going to church. Well, you can't tell me, big man like me, that you're not going to church. You are going to church, and I'm going to help you. Now, what kind of help did she need? Well, we had to put her on her shoes. You ever try to put shoes on a teenager if she didn't want the shoes? It took my wife and I together to do it, but we got them on. And we got her up out of her chair, and her knees wouldn't work. So this stiff-kneed kid, we finally got her in the car. And she sat there in that car, glaring at everything. We got to church and pulled up to the church. And there was her girlfriend standing out there. She jumped out of the car and greeted her girlfriend. You know, that girlfriend had no idea how we got her there. You just go to church on Wednesday, and we're going to give you all the help you need. Well, don't you think you turn your children against church? Are you afraid of turning your children against education? Are you afraid of turning your children against doctors? You will do what you consider to be important. And if you're going to train your children that going to church is unimportant, then you will do that. You see, you're telling yourself that you're giving them a choice. You don't give children a choice about whether they go to school, do you? Whether they should go to the doctor? There's some areas where you don't have a choice. In my judgment, my children went to church every Sunday and every Wednesday, whether they liked it or not. I remember one of our kids was saying, well, that was a lousy sermon this morning. I said, yeah, sure was. Hope it would be better tonight. I've had some of my children have a nasty for a whole semester. We made her go to school every day to this nasty teacher for a whole semester. It was good for her. I mean, life doesn't turn out so that everybody's nice to you. You have to live with nasty people sometimes.
That's right.
And you see, if you're trying to make your children happy, oh, you look unhappy, you don't have to do this. Joy is a fruit of the Spirit. Isn't it? You can't make them happy. You see to it they do what you ask them to do. And why do you ask them to do it? Because in your judgment, what you ask them to do is in their best interests. I talked to folks sometime. Their children are old enough now to choose a college. I remember one mother very triumphantly saying, I'm so happy she chose the college that I wanted her to go to, and I didn't tell her what I thought at all. I don't think that's so admirable. Just imagine, here's a college student, a person old enough to go to college, and there are folks who couldn't even care less where she goes to college. I should think that one of the most important things would be to understand what mother's opinion is about college. And not only that, but this is where I want you to go. When our kids were college age, we gave them a list. We said, you go to a college on this list. Pick anyone you want on this list. Children need help. They need a friendly adult who has a friendly relationship with his partner. And the two of you, well, your primary preoccupation in life is to make choices on behalf of your children, your beloved children. That's one of your primary tasks. So when you're setting limits then, suggest some ideas for setting limits. They help the parent and the child to know what is expected. Supper time is 6 o'clock. Remember when our kids were growing up, my wife used to call. Supper's ready. Supper wasn't ready. She didn't have the table set yet. What she meant is, I'm starting to mash the potatoes. That's what she meant. So what it meant to me and the kids is, stay out of the kitchen or you'll get a job. When supper was ready, she meant for us to get in that room, and we got in. See, it was one of our limits. When supper was ready, see, she cut that out after a while. When she realized that she was saying something she didn't mean. Supper wasn't ready. So when she corrected that, when supper was ready, we got to the table. I don't care what rules you make, whatever limits you set, you better be convinced that they're in the kids' best interests. And you see to it that they do it. Now, teaching children non-compliance is one of the most important things that they'll learn. Because you have bosses that don't treat you right. You have neighbors that don't treat you right. You have salespeople that don't treat you right. You do what you do because you have to do it, not because people are nice to you. Now, one of your requirements is that we are nice to each other and ourselves. Don't scream at each other. You see, if you set that kind of a limit, you're going to work at it for a long time to get them not to do that. But the first thing you got to do is quit screaming yourself. You know, when I was in school, women were screaming at their kids, you come in the house! So we taught them, you shouldn't scream at your children like that. So then they would say, you come in the house. The same nasty spirit, all they did was cut down on the volume. Follow what I'm saying? You're demonstrating your character while you're training your children. So a limit will help them to understand what is expected. Come home at 9 o'clock. Come in at 6 o'clock. You don't ask them to do that unless you're prepared to follow it up. That means your physical presence has to be there. Number two, it gives you a framework for guidance and training. I'm going to teach you how to tie your shoes. Put your shoes on, I want you to tie your shoes. So you teach them how to tie their shoes, and then you follow up and see to it that they tie their shoes. Now once they know how to tie their shoes, you want them to tie their shoes, not you. Teaching children to comply with some reasonable limits is the best thing you can do for them in terms of what they have to do when they are adults and they have to comply to the requests of an employer or employee or a group that they're in. But to have a mind to comply with reasonable limits is a wonderful attitude to have in life. Number three, it gives you a basis for your supervision. don't, it's not that you come in when you feel like it. If you set a time, then it's up to you to see that they get there at that time. This is also a test of parental unity. Can you set a limit that the two of you will agree on? You see, one of the parents can say, I think you're too hard on the children. Like the limit might be, pick up the toys when you're through with them. And the other parent says, that's too strict. So when one is home, they pick up the toys. When the other one is home, they don't have to pick up the toys. What you're talking about is these children are observing that you don't need to pay any attention to these adults. I remember one kid who said, I can get anything I want. There are certain things, if I want those, I would never ask my dad, I'll ask my mom. If I get my mom committed, she'll take on my dad. There are other things, if I want those, I wouldn't ask my dad, I'd ask my mom. So I get them committed, he'll take on my mom. Mom will take on my dad. So I just stand back and let them fight it out. Another point. If you set limits, it reveals areas of need. What kind of help do your children need? You should study